This is What Does It Profit? And I'm your host, Dr. Dawn Carpenter. Each week in this podcast, I'll talk to some of the leading thinkers and researchers, entrepreneurs and executives about things like conscious capitalism, sustainability, and business ethics. Things that feel all the more urgent as we as a planet face enormous challenges. Climate change, pandemics, demands for social reform. Many of these challenges brought about, some would argue, by capitalism. Each episode, each guest, will bring me a little closer to finding out what does it profit. Like many of you, I'm totally zoomed out this year, both as a participant and as a speaker. For those of you who just can't get enough of these virtual forums, however, you'll find a link on our website to a session I'm doing today with Coventry Law School in the UK and Bruce Herbert of Newground Social Investment from episode number one of this season of the What Does It Profit podcast. Just go to the blog post for episode one at whatdoesitprofitpodcast.com and we'll have a link there if you'd like to listen in. In our conversation today, we're going to pick up a bit where we left off last episode in our conversation with Kat Berman of CNOTE. And as it happens, and because we live in a world of 6 degrees of separation, Kat was speaking last week at the annual conference of the Opportunity Finance Network, led by our guest today, CEO Lisa Mensa of OFN. In listening to Lisa's opening remarks of OFN's 2020 conference, she mentioned something that captivated me. Yes, me, the finance professor with a playlist. She called up an old gospel classic, I Don't Feel No Ways Tired. She didn't play it, but I think we should take a listen. Just makes you want to lean into the pain of this year and keep on with what OFN calls that long march to finance justice, using the tools of finance to improve economic security of the working poor. Lisa comes to this work having served as the Undersecretary of Agriculture for Rural Development in the Obama administration and as the founding executive director of the Initiative on Financial Security at the Aspen Institute, not to mention stints at both Citibank and the Ford Foundation. Let's talk finance justice and the work of community development, financial institutions with Lisa Mensa. Well, now let's welcome to the What Does It Profit podcast, Lisa Mensa. Lisa is the CEO and president of Opportunity Finance Network. Lisa, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dawn. Lovely to be here.
Well, I have to start at what I see as the beginning of all of this, this idea of finance justice. What is that all about?
Oh, Don, now that's a great question. Finance justice is the name we've given our recent conference and a new fund. But to me, it's an acknowledgement that justice, the fight for justice, and here in our country of America, is going to take money. The fight to undo all the injustice in our world is going to take money and investment and undoing the kind of disinvestment that's led to so much injustice and inequality. So I love the term because finance justice connotes getting in there, rolling up your sleeves, doing the hard work that change is going to take. And from my perspective, it will take money.
Yeah, I think of the late John Lewis and, you know, this idea of good trouble. I mean, you guys are, you know, are you doing good trouble in the finance sector?
I love being in the same sentence with John Lewis. Yeah. I think what Lewis taught from a lifetime of staying in the struggle is that justice is a fight. And if you leave things just to markets unfettered or just change as it flows, you won't get the kind of outcomes you need. And so where I feel in deep sympathy with Lewis and his long struggle for civil rights is that I lead a set of institutions that's been fighting for economic rights and using the tool of finance, of lending, to change outcomes for low-income people all throughout the country. And that's a similar struggle. It's just different tools.
Yeah, I think about your opening remarks in your recent 2020 annual conference. You reference an old gospel classic, I Don't Feel No Ways Tired. It happens to be one of my favorites, and I'm going to spare the listeners my version of it.
We both will.
What do you draw from that? What was your inspiration in thinking about that song and the work that you do?
This has been a year of fatigue. It's a pandemic, for goodness sakes. Everybody's working really hard. And what I love about the gospel song, I Don't Feel No Ways Tired, is that it's an ironic acknowledgement of how tough struggle is. And what it says is, despite all that the singer's singing, I don't feel no ways tired because I've come too far. And God didn't bring us this far to leave us. And that's probably the most powerful line for me, that I don't believe he brought me this far to leave me. That justice is not without struggle, but struggle is not in vain. Mm. That struggle, rewards come, that the journey has been far, and that the journey is not over, and the journey is worth it. That's my inspiration out of that gospel song, that no matter how tired we feel, how sometimes it doesn't feel like we've gone that far, we have to say there was intention to this, and there was, for a faith audience, a belief that there's, you know, that there's purpose to this, that there is, we're not going to be left out. You know, this is going to have meaning.
Sure. Well, you talk about purpose and mission. I mean, those are the kinds of organizations who are your members. Tell our listeners what this idea of being a community development financial institution, or as we say, a CDFI, what does that mean?
We are a set of institutions who are all lenders. We all lend money, and we do so lending with a heart, lending with purpose. We are, in some cases, loan funds, in some cases, community banks, in some cases, we are venture funds, in some cases, we're credit unions. Sometimes we're very small micro enterprise funds, and sometimes we're very large housing funds. But all of us are lenders. All of us use the tools of finance. And finance is both the way we use our money and the way we use our brains and our hearts to make decisions about who gets that money. And for the CDFI field, we are all on a mission to create better communities, move people out of poverty into lives of greater success. And whether we're financing individuals or homes or businesses or facilities, we're trying to move people into lives of greater economic success. And that's this funny combination that CDFIs have. I love it because I started life as a banker, and most of us, we use these very boring tools, you know. How does a loan get structured? And we use the tools of lending and of risk management. But we're really quite passionate about change. And that's what makes this field great.
Yeah, you know, I started life out as a banker too. And I often wonder, why don't all bankers look at finance this way? I just participated in a session with the Vatican with young economists and business people from around the world, thinking that this is actually how we should work, you know, finance should be in service to humanity. I'm like, well, yeah, the CDFIs have been doing this for years. Why can't we just make it the normal way? But they, you know, make a commitment to lending in disinvested communities. And, you know, there are benefits and supports for doing that. And, you know, you give voice and leadership to that movement.
I love this mission. And, you know, I do understand all levels of the economy need and deserve finance. That's true. But I get to work on the side of the economy that isn't a natural fit, largely because it's not profit maximizing. You know, it can repay, and we have a fantastic track record as a field of not losing money. But we're not profit maximizing, so we don't make a lot of money. Many of us are nonprofits, and it means that you can make different choices about what you seek. You can hang in there in a community that other banks have said there's just not enough profit in it to stay. And what I love is that we're often partnered with the profit maximizing sector because they too recognize that they need us fighting for these communities. So, but it's a great way to be a lender.
Tell us a little bit more. I mean, I think about some of the work that your members are doing. I mean, something, you know, as critical as childcare during COVID. I mean, you guys are lending into that world.
Yeah. I think about this, and I'm really proud of groups like the Low Income Investment Fund. They're San Francisco based, but they work nationally. And when this crisis hit, what a traditional lender needs to do is kind of move their lending into things that are more sure assets, often called the flight to quality. And what we can do is stay the course longer. And so we offered many, the LIFT program was to actually reach out to center-based childcare activities who were going to see disruptions in service, maybe a downturn in the number of slots, maybe slowness in getting cash receipts, and structure financing to weather through these months of uncertainty. Sometimes there have been ups and downs. And to structure the loan or to structure the expansion or the working capital, sometimes that they beat the federal or state resources that were there as well or didn't come in time. So I like to think of our sector, I've called us the financial first responders. And it's because we were often able to go quickly because we knew these sectors already. We knew who was leading the daycare business or the adult daycare or, you know, some other service. And we were able to structure the loan so that it fit the need or could wait a little. And many of our first responders took more time, you know, restructured, delayed, went to zero interest to give businesses and facilities a longer time to make it or to get reorganized for the recovery.
Yeah, this is that patient capital. Tell us a little bit about what you guys were doing. You know, we had a summer of unrest, maybe to put it mildly, you know, out in Minneapolis or over in Philadelphia. You know, there were a lot of protests going on. Tell us a little bit about what your members were doing.
Our members often specialize in key sectors. So many of our members were really structured to have small business portfolios. And what we found so amazing is in the very areas where they had been structuring small businesses, these were often some of the businesses that were unfortunate victims of the rioting. And our members were able to see and stand with both sides. And it sounds a little strange, but what it looks like is, you know, they were the first ones to finance an immigrant business. And they'll be the first ones to help that same immigrant business reorganize. But they did stand with the protesters as well and know that people had legitimate grief around treatment, around years of disinvestment, and around unfairness. So where we were quite proud of our members is that they understood the struggles that the larger communities were protesting, but were able to stand with the businesses who would need rebuilding, with the commercial strips that would need rebuilding. I fully anticipate that many of our members will be some of the first lenders back in as we need to rebuild after difficult times. So I think it's that clarity of vision and mission they have. We are a field that lends in and from communities. We are with these communities. And that's a beautiful role to have. It means you're really often our lenders come right from the communities that they're trying to help. And it means that they have a particular compassion for the struggle and the need for progress and moving forward.
Well, you talk about struggles. I think of those poor immigrant families down in Texas. I understand some of your members have gotten engaged with that important work.
It's so interesting when you have people working with immigrant families on issues like homeownership, because what you're often able to do if you're a CDFI is touch the family at many points. Sometimes you're running a financial literacy or savings program that can support the path to down payment savings. And sometimes they were also the producers or the developers of the housing, so they were actually supporting the builders. So what I loved is that our CDFIs kind of met the moment, understood the families they were supporting, understood But a lot of folks can be homeowners, particularly when you're building a home that's under $100,000, you know, and that's not where a profit maximizing builder will often build for. You know, they'll build for what can be sold in the marketplace, often much more upscale. To me, it's the ultimate picture of hope in a community that you can see people who are recent immigrants or children of immigrants as, you know, holders of the American dream, people that can be employed, have jobs, you know, raise their children in stable settings. Often they're creating the financing of the schools or health clinics as well. So that's the exciting thing to see what CDFIs is, an ability to lend into multiple areas.
That reminds me of, you know, something that we haven't explicitly talked about, but the other facet to CDFIs, which is more of a the wraparound services that go with, you know, these loans that really, I would think, increase the odds of being, you know, a successful project.
One of the joys of being CDFI is those first two words, community development, means that financing can be seen in a context of how we're lifting up an entire community or more families inside of a community. We see more time spent on deals. We're often willing to hang in there and bring multiple sources of money to a project. And we're really good at that because we're so committed to the comprehensive nature of community development. I was in Kansas City last year, pre-pandemic, and I saw the coming together of how a CDFI, and in this case it was IFF, worked for several months to really finance a huge expanded daycare and health center. And it was so great to see the hundreds of families who were finally going to get a better school setting for their preschoolers, but also a health center at the beginning, at the center of the place, which would be services for grown-ups, for adults, for grandmas who came in. And I thought, it's just such a classic, you know, that a CDFI would fight for the very different streams of income. Often there's a program to support a health center that's different from a program to support a daycare. And yet everybody would agree those are good commingled services, but often it takes quite a bit of determination to pull that together and to do a kind of, you know, to finance a structure that makes a lot of sense in the end. But it isn't always the way the money is organized or the budgets are organized. So we're often a kind of glue that holds it together. That's why we're often referred to as a mayor's best friend or a, you know, a real community development agent.
If I were to, you know, paint a picture of a successful CDFI lender or a CDFI bank officer, you know, these are the people that do the hard calculus, because you're oftentimes putting together very disparate streams of support and collateral and revenue streams that come in different cycles and have, you know, different levels of reality or collateral behind them. And, you know, it's complicated business.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? You would think the complication of finances in these very complex global deals.
Oh, no way.
The way I was trained. But often the complexity is in a smaller deal or in something where the cash flows are not as, you know, predictable, or when you're really just getting into the tedium. One of my favorite banks in Alabama says, my job is to just to make things happen, to fight for it, to use government money that may be sitting in one program and yet can be applied to another financing. And so I like that's why I think our title of finance justice kind of makes sense. It's when justice is a fight, it's hard. And you got to be willing to get in there, roll up your sleeves, and hang in there until the change happens. And that's what I like about my CDFIs. They are willing to do that.
Well, I can see the commercials now. You know, it's the Finance Justice League. You've got your own slew of superheroes. Lisa, I'm going to ask you, which one are you?
Oh, man. I don't have a lot of upper body strength, so I'm afraid I shouldn't pick anything with a lasso or a sword.
Oh, no, no. I won't put you on the spot. But actually, in next season on What Does It Profit, we're going to have the founder of Comic-Con on talking about the social justice themes in comic books. So
great. I love it.
Yeah,
I love
so
it.
We'll
but
leave
I definitely
it
want to be in the fight. I definitely want to be part of it.
So. Well, you know, speaking of part of it, you know, this is all hinging on partnerships, and they're very diverse players. I mean, I think of the investors, those commercial banks that support the CDFI world. Talk about their role.
Yeah. Luckily, we've got some experience in the 40 years that this field has been at work. We've got some real experience with partners. You know, we're a field that got started with, frankly, religious investors. And we moved to philanthropy and then banks. The Community Reinvestment Act made sure that banks found strong partners with us. But I'm excited about a couple of partnerships. I am excited about what we think is possible with our Finance Justice Fund. And this is our hope to bring $1 billion of new capital into Black and Latino and Native and rural communities. And we want to create a fund that will actually bring those dollars into very low-income Black, Latino, Native, rural communities and let them have greater impacts in small business and housing and facilities financing. And the exciting thing is that corporate America, not ones with CRA obligation, corporate America is interested in this. And we had the exciting case of Twitter that helped us with $100 million of their treasury debt that's going to be with us for 10 years, reaching these communities.
Wow.
And then earlier this summer, we had
not to be outdone by Google, yes.
Coming in. Yeah. So to me, this is an exciting moment for private partnerships, people that have not been part of this field in the past, saying, we trust you. We trust your experience. We want to do our part. We are going to put some of our funds on loan with you so that you can make change in these communities. And I think their ability to do that will spur two other kind of partners. We still need philanthropic dollars. You can't cure poverty just with debt alone. So we're going to need some philanthropic dollars. And then we're going to need some public dollars. And this is the other level of partnership that I'm excited about. There have always been federal dollars that were active in low-income communities, but I think we have a chance now to call on an even stronger partnership and use these private funds in a way that we can leverage the government dollars even further.
So are you telling me there's hope in the Biden administration?
I am a hopeful person. And I will say about this last administration, the Trump administration, that while they often went forward with very modest budget requests, in working with Congress, we were able to move a lot of funding to our CDFI hands. And when it came time to the middle of this pandemic, we moved a whole lot of payroll protection program dollars. It's estimated that the CDFIs and minority development institutions moved $7 billion in PPP loans to struggling businesses and nonprofits. But I am definitely excited about the new administration. I served in the last one, so I'm a believer in what can happen with intention. And I am encouraged by the Biden administration's explicit focus on racial equity and an explicit focus on how that will be achieved through things like small business opportunity and building a true investments in home ownership. Those are right up our alley. And they're saying it now before they're even in office that those are going to be priority areas. And that's very encouraging.
Oh, sure. I mean, you see the importance of the equity in home ownership as being the bedrock of creating wealth. For many people.
Yes. It's a hard path to wealth in this country, but homeownership is one of the things where, if done right and with fairly priced products, you can end up both with shelter and with a nest egg. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of what our CDFIs work on is investments in homeownership and housing and, frankly, in things like manufactured housing, and that, you know, has often been a neglected part of the wealth equation. So I'm excited that we have a renewed call for this. And I think that, you know, having served in the Department of Agriculture in the prior administration, people, I think, understand now that no part of America should be left behind, rural, urban, native, and that part of that means, you know, reinvesting in things that matter so deeply to people, shelter, you know, education, health, all those things. And we can be part of that.
Well, Lisa, I'm not going to let you leave this show without asking you the quintessential What Does It Profit podcast question, which is, Lisa, what does it profit the work that CDFIs do?
I love the name of this podcast, and I love the verse, because it's really a verse that I think forces us to look at, in the accounting of life, what really matters.
Right.
And I think that CDFIs and the work I am so privileged to do and to help lead right now, we are saying you can work with the economy that we have here on the eve of 2021, and that you can force that economy to deliver more good to people who haven't got a shake out of this. So what does it profit? It matters that we get up in the morning and work to finance that business that everybody else has given up on, or the second business that the same entrepreneur is going to have to rebuild after this pandemic. What does it profit? It matters. It means we can help deliver a better life for someone. So for me, the question that your podcast is so beautifully wrestling with, to me, is how do we live in this capitalist society and do it in a way that matters? And I have the privilege to wake up every day and fight for a group of institutions who says, yes, it does matter, and we can do more with the tools we have. And so that's what I would say.
And I don't feel no ways tired.
Amen.
Amen. Lisa,
can't be tired.
That's right. Thank you so much for joining us today. I've really enjoyed this conversation. I'll make sure our listeners have links to resources to find out more about the great work that you and your member organizations are doing. We'll put it in the show notes.
Thank you, Dawn. Thank you for reaching out. A real pleasure to talk with you.
This is What Does It Profit? Links to resources related to the issues we've discussed in this episode are in the show notes. I invite you to join our listener referral program and check out our list of friends on our website at whatdoesitprofitpodcast.com. I also encourage you to check out a really interesting new podcast called Uncertain Things. It was started this year by two journalist friends and roommates, Adam and Vanessa, as a way of finding meaning in these crazy times. They have free-flowing, far-ranging, and occasionally irreverent conversations with really smart people, historians and economists, moral philosophers, and even artists. And in January, they'll be talking with me. In our next episode, the man who gave the world the triple bottom line, people, planet, and profit, the man called the Dean of Corporate Social Responsibility, the man also known as Greenpeace and Pinstripes, and the ambassador for the future. No, those aren't four men. It's Chief Pollinator, John Elkington.
I think there's sort of an opportunistic infection, the sort of thing that comes up when a system is diseased, and our economies, our societies, and the natural environment are now all compromised in one way or another. And so we're going to have to regenerate them all simultaneously, which sounds impossible, but I actually think it's eminently doable.
In the meantime, please rate and review us wherever you're listening, and let your friends know about the show. Quick sharing links can be found on our website. Ratings, reviews, and subscriptions on your favorite podcast platform means so much to us. We would love to hear from you. Show ideas and comments are always welcome. Follow us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter at WDIP Podcast. What Does It Profit Podcast is written and hosted by me, Dr. Dawn Carpenter. The show is produced by Jordan Gaspour. Executive producers are Nate Toby and Barbara Landis. Special thanks to our talented interns, Nate, Niels, Hannah, and Andrew, and our friends at Georgetown University's McDonough School of Business, Kalmanovitz Initiative for Labor and the Working Poor, Business for Impact, the Beck Center for Social Impact and Innovation, the DC Chapter of Conscious Capitalism, and Switchin' Board Studios. And a special shout out to our friends at Castbox for adding us to their staff favorites list. Before I let you go, let me remind you to never stop asking yourself, what does it profit?